This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another edition of Making Mount Rushmore here on The Pop Experience. I am your host slash moderator slash panelist for this episode, Steve Riddle. This is, of course, episode number 51. As you know, we celebrated our 50th episode a few months ago back in January. Did have to go on a little bit of a hiatus after that, just, you know, life gets in the way sometimes. But I am glad to be back. And we've got a very unique topic to talk about today, as we are going to be diving back into the world of television. And to do so, I got a pair of great gentlemen on with me. They've both been on before, so you are familiar with them. So let's go ahead and bring them in. First, you can find this gentleman over on the North-South Connection, as he is the co-host of one of the best podcasts over there, Wrestling War Zone, where he and JT are going through the Monday Night Wars. And I also have the honor of meeting him for the first time in person, back at WrestleMania weekend a couple weeks ago, and that's Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Steve. Great to meet you in Philly. Had a great weekend. Survived the car ride from hell that people are now quoting it as. But yeah, always happy to do these, and a great topic tonight.
Yeah, we got a lot of great stories from that weekend that we could, you know, spend several hours on talking about here. But we'll go ahead now and bring in the other panelist here. Like I said, he's also been on before. You can usually find him also over on the North-South Connection, as he is a regular contributor to Chronoso. And he also has a few other great podcasts, the 24-Inch podcast and the Sportscasters podcast. It is Mr. Steve Bennett. Steve, how are you, sir?
Hey now, what is up, Steve? Glad to be back. We mended some fences last time. You were calling me an old man. We took care of that last time. I always like to mention, of course, that I once did this podcast with my late great friend from New Jersey, and we miss him very much. I wish he was here to see his Texans with the CJ Stroud and. I was in New Jersey a couple weeks ago. I seen the Italian national soccer team for the first time. It's a thrill of a lifetime. But I wish Calvin was there with me. Every time I'm in Jersey, I miss him. And every time I'm on this podcast, I miss him. So I want to give him a shout out. And I've never done a podcast with Chad before. Probably never thought I would. So good to be doing that as well. So thanks for having me.
Of course. And yes, yes, Calvin, we do still miss terribly to this day. So definitely his presence is still felt amongst the members of the nation. So but of course, like I said, this episode we have here is a really good one. We are, of course, like I said, talking about television. We're going to be talking about comedies and dramas. This is our third decade episode. Basically, we did one for the 80s, one for the 90s, and now we're going to be doing one for the 2000s, specifically more so 2000 to 2009. Any, you know, TV shows that came out, you know, either within that 10 years or kind of maybe came out like in the late 90s or the early part of the 2010s, but are kind of more synonymous with this particular decade, is what we're going to be talking about today. So we will start things off with the comedies, or I should say the sitcoms, to be more specific. And Steve, we'll go ahead and start with you. Give us the first entry on your Mount Rushmore of 2000s TV sitcoms.
All right. So I would say that this is the clear curtain jerker match here. You know, I think of the two topics where baseball players, this would be Bob Uecker, and the second part would be Joe DiMaggio or something like that. I think it's pretty weak. I think I have about 7 total or 8 total versus 15, 20. But when I made my list, there was one automatic show I wrote down, and that was The Office. Obviously, the Michael Scott years specifically, wasn't a big fan after he left, but the finale was good. There was brilliance throughout. Some of the best episodes could never be done today, which is why sitcoms stink, and it's a shame. But an incredible run they had. It started in 2005, so definitely in this range, and one I'd be surprised a little bit if it wasn't on everybody's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I did have it on my Mount Rushmore as well. Of course, The Office, the specific we're talking about is, of course, the American version, not the
Right, which is why I mentioned the
British version.
Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, I mean this show, when it first came out in 05, just, you know, completely took over dominated the airwaves, really puts, you know, Steve Carell on the map. You know, some really, you know, good one-liners throughout the series. Obviously, you know, that's what she said. It became part of the language lexicon. And then, like I said, once Carell left, series kind of went downhill a little bit. You know, maybe stayed on a year or two more than I think people probably wanted it to. But at the end of the day, you know, when you talk about, you know, series from this particular decade, there is no question that The Office definitely belongs at the top as one of the most influential and important shows from that decade. And we actually do have a clean sweep because Chad had it on his Mount Rushmore as well.
Yeah, one more thing I wanted to say about it too is its initial popularity really grew through people buying episodes on iTunes when iTunes started to put TV episodes on the app. So that was something, it was changing the game in that sense. You know, the popularity sort of grew out of that and sort of opened the doors towards this path we are on now where everything's on streaming, but one of the first shows to get truly big because of digital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Chad, did you want to talk anything else about The Office?
For me, I graduated college in 2008, started an office job. So The Office was very relatable to me, kind of being in that environment. I think that's something that, you know, now I work from home, so I don't get that much kind of inner office stuff happening with coworkers and whatnot. And that is one of the things. I mean, I love not being able to having to commute into downtown Atlanta every day. But the flip side of that is you do miss some of those things, as there were certain individuals in the office in real life that I worked in that really felt like kind of extensions of the characters I was seeing on the TV screen. So they really nailed it. Those first, I would say, 5-6 seasons are just absolutely tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. All right, well, Chad, we'll stick with you. Give us the next entry on your Mount Rushmore of 2000 sitcoms.
So I'm going to go with one that, in kind of the history of my TV watching and just how old I was around this time, I kind of had I think pretty similar trajectory of when I was a real young kid, was when Cheers and Cosby Show and those popular sitcoms from the 80s were wrapping up. And then in the 90s, my parents watched Frasier and Seinfeld and Friends, the most popular sitcoms of the day. So this was the show that kind of I discovered on my own. As I got older, it had a lot more dry humor. It didn't have a laugh track. It's the first kind of comedy that I can think of that I watched and really loved that didn't have a laugh track attached to it. And that's Arrested Development. The three seasons of it that aired, I think, are, again, absolutely tremendous. Very quotable show. Me and my brother still say, like, there's always money in the banana stand to this day. With just in most of our conversations, and it's one that I'm not, again, too fond of the Netflix seasons when it came back, but those first three seasons of its original run that happened in the mid-2000s are some of my favorite television seasons of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely an interesting one. I had it as an honorable mention. Didn't watch a ton of it, but I do remember, you know, it being on pretty regularly. I mean, it had a pretty you know, good little cast. I mean, you're talking like Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, Michael Cera, Jeffrey Tambor, David Cross. So some pretty, you know, decent names. When it first came out, kind of, you know, again, a show that kind of put some of those people on the map. And yeah, I didn't know that it had gotten, you know, that it didn't come, that it, after it got, you know, stopped in 06, that it came back in 2013 on Netflix. But yeah, it's again one of those, I think just one of those ones when it came out, almost kind of want to say flew under the radar just because some other shows that came out around that same time. But I think when you look back at the 2000s, I know a lot of people do say that when they think about great sitcoms, this is definitely one of the ones that that does come to people's minds. Steve, did you have anything else to say about Arrested Development?
Well, yeah, what I was going to say about it is, again, it's sort of a trailblazer in the sense that it gained most of its popularity through the DVD box sets. I think the Cartoon Family Guy are another example of that, that it had one life on television, and then the DVDs took it to another life, which probably led to the eventual reboot on Netflix. I've never seen it. It's on my list of things to watch. Somehow I missed it. I'm not a liker. I've just never seen it, but it's definitely one I want to catch up on. I've heard great things, and I appreciate its importance in this era in terms of the transition to off broadcast platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's one thing that we talk about a lot when it comes to like this particular decade, because we were starting to see that transition from like, you know, regular television to the streaming services, and it was becoming like this brand new medium for television. So definitely helped for a lot of these shows to get some life after they went off the air. So definitely agree with that. So I'll go ahead and give my next entry on my Mount Rushmore. And this is another show I was always kind of interested in, never watched a lot of it. I've seen a couple of episodes here and there. But again, just one of those ones when you think of this decade, this is the one I think a lot of people come to mind for most. And that's 30 Rock. Of course, this was when Tina Fey was kind of at the height of her powers, kind of creating this, interesting little satirical sitcom. And he, again, really good cast. I mean, you had Tracy Morgan, Alec Baldwin, just again, one of those it seemed like sometimes, for some people it may have been a little too, smart for them, maybe just based on the way it was filmed and the way it was written. But obviously very successful. It was on for seven seasons, won a ton of awards, got nominated for a ton of awards. And again, it's just one of those ones when you think of, for me at least, when you think of this decade, this is definitely one of the ones that that you have to come back to as being one of the biggest shows from this decade. So, it did not make anybody else's Mount Rushmore, but Steve, did you have anything else to say about 30 Rock?
Yeah, I would just say that this is, I want to give a shout out to your mother. I know she loves NBC. This was an NBC show that it was around this time that I just didn't get their shows. People love them. This, maybe Park and Rec, maybe one that will come up later. Scrubs, I think, was another one. I didn't get it. I felt like they had transitioned away from the humor that I enjoyed to humor I didn't. Maybe you say it was smart. Maybe I wasn't smart enough for it. I don't know what the problem was for me, but I just never made a connection to some of these 2000 NBC comedies, with, of course, with The Office as an exception. But also, I want to give your mother a shout out. We know she's a dear, dear fan of NBC. So I want to mention that as well.
Thank you. I'm sure she greatly appreciates that.
Yes.
Chad?
So this would have been an honorable mention for me. It's one that I did enjoy and watched it while it was airing. Very, very quick paced, I think. I think that's the main takeaway that I remember is, I mean, it's a joke a second on this show, just constantly. It's probably a show that's due for a rewatch because I think the reason that it didn't make my Mount Rushmore where other shows did is I just didn't have the emotional connection to it. And it was so quick-witted and kind of in the moment that a lot of stuff just didn't necessarily have that lasting impression. I'd watch an episode, very enjoyable. I would find it funny. I would laugh. But then, the next day you might could ask me, hey, did you catch 30 Rock last night? And I couldn't recount certain plot points or quotes, rattle off jokes and stuff like that, like I can on other shows. But I really enjoyed it, and it was a staple in my household for sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, Steve, we'll go back around to you. Give us the next entry on your Mount Rushmore of 2000 sitcoms.
All right, so this is an interesting one, especially in terms of time frame. But the first season was in 2000, and it ended, what, a week ago. Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Larry David vehicle, I think one of the most hilarious television shows of all time. I think Larry David has two of the top five, with Seinfeld as well. What I love about this show is he did seasons when he wanted to do them, and that's why it lasted 24 years, and it had an unbelievable finale, which righted the wrong of the Seinfeld finale, and it's a beautiful show with beautiful seasons. I don't know that it has the downfall that some sitcoms do. Certainly, you know, I don't know that this season was an A-plus fastball, but it never hit the lows maybe that some shows do. Like The Office, I think, has much lower lows than Curb does, which is incredible for 24 years. And also, this is on my list, and I love it so much because it didn't fall into the traps that many shows have fallen into in the modern time. It is what it is, unapologetically, and, you know, didn't change for anyone. The jokes that are in it now would have been in it in 2000 or 1990 or 1960, whenever they made it. So I think it's one of the great comedies of all time. Shout out to Larry David and everyone on the cast. Rest in peace to Richard Lewis. And again, 24-year run, and Larry did it when he wanted to and did it his way, and it's an unbelievable piece of art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. You forget that the show's been around as long as it has, but I mean, I'm just kind of looking now. They did kind of take some extended breaks between seasons, so, you know, maybe that was, you know, maybe that was part of a reason why it stayed as fresh as it was. I'm sure it probably kept a lot of people, you know, hanging in suspense for when it would come back. But yeah, just again, one of those, you know, kind of shows that, you know, didn't take itself too seriously. Like you said, kind of the vein of a Seinfeld, obviously with Larry David. And of course, those that are regular listeners of the Place to Be podcast know that very, you know, some of the early episodes, you would hear a lot of quotes from this show, including one in particular, which I'm not going to repeat. I'm sure you know which one I'm talking about, but yeah, definitely an interesting show. And this is, again, one that I've always kind of wanted to go back and watch, because I have heard a lot of really good things about it. So now that it has concluded, maybe that's on my to-do list here. So I did have it as a honorable mention, but Chad had it on his main Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. So this was a show I came in a little bit later to. Didn't watch it. I don't even know what season it would have been. Maybe four or five was the first one that I caught up with. And I've always, I think, maybe appreciated it more than liked it until recent times. And I think the older I've gotten, and probably the more crotchety like Larry David I've gotten, I've changed. And now when I rewatch, I'm certainly in the Larry is right camp on most of the situations that I was previously. So I do think it's a show that ages well. For its longevity, that's very impressive. That, you know, season one may not be the best season of its run. I don't think it is, but still, you could watch that season from 2000. And it still is funny today.
Mm-hmm.
Also had the Seinfeld reunion too in there, the one season, which was great.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, I'll go ahead and give another one of my entries on my Mount Rushmore, and Steve actually kind of teased it a bit, but yes, since I talked about the Tina Fey-led sitcom, I figured I will do the Amy Poehler one now, and that's, of course, Parks and Recreation. Came out in 2009, but still kind of, you know, synonymous, kind of at that little, like, bridge between the 2000s and into the 2010s. You know, again, pretty, you know, really good cast. Rashida Jones as the Ansari. This is basically what launched Chris Pratt's career. You know, he kind of was, you know, kind of starting to make a name for himself, and he ends up doing this show, and then kind of, obviously, we know what he would have become throughout the next decade. But again, another really kind of, you know, show that's again, I've always kind of I've seen a couple of episodes, and always again just wanted to go back and watch. Didn't have that long of a as long of a run as say 30 Rock did, but again, just one of those ones where you know, it just seems like you know, like I said, Amy Poehler was kind of at the peak of her powers as well, so kind of, you know, something for her to kind of get her teeth into after, you know, Saturday Night Live, and you know, kind of do what her her bestie Tina Fey did, again, kind of to a lesser extent, but still had a really solid run with it. Again, this did not make anybody else's Mount Rushmore, but Steve, did you have anything else to say about Parks and Rec?
No, I would just say that what's very interesting is it seems like you're making a very objective list, where I certainly made one that was true to myself, and I don't think there's any right way or wrong way to do it, but I think it's interesting to hear your approach versus mine, and seemingly Chad's as well so far. I just never found Amy Poehler or whatever it is funny. Never connected with the show, but I think the most interesting thing is just how this episode is shaping up, and I'm interested to see if it continues in dramas too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chad.
This is my number five. I really loved this show when it added Adam Scott and Rob Lowe. I think that created a great dynamic. This show could get slightly sappy at points and melodramatic, but when it did hit on the emotional level, which it did sometimes, it hit better than most other sitcoms. So it does have that going for it. And the ensemble cast, I mean, Ron Swanson, I think, is one of the great sitcom characters of all time. Just an amazing character. So great show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go back around again to Steve. Give us the next entry on your Mount Rushmore of 2000 sitcoms.
Sure. To go back on what I was saying about making the list pretty authentic to myself, my third one is Entourage, 2004. I was 24 years old when this show started. I was probably the perfect age to enjoy it. I think Ari Gold is one of the best characters in a sitcom ever. I have a list of phrases and words that are popular on the internet that I absolutely hate. Things like, that wasn't on my bingo card, and hold my beer. Some shit like that, it drives me up the wall. And This Didn't Age Well is another one that makes me want to put my head through a window. Anyone who says that, they're saying something different. They're saying, you know, that they changed. And maybe I don't change much, but I think when I go back and watch these, I still think they're hilarious because I haven't changed and I stay true to myself. This is a polarizing show. I know people who loved it and they watch it now and they say, oh, you know, it's not funny because the character was mean or whatever. Ari Gold was really mean. He was playing a really mean guy. It's like people who don't like the Macho Man in the early 80s because he was mean to Elizabeth. It's like they're missing the point. He was doing that on purpose. He was a heel. Ari Gold was a heel in this show. I think he's one of the best characters ever. And again, I was the perfect age for this when it came out. I like the movie. I wish it did better because they probably would have done more of them. I think it's one of those shows that the cast just had such great chemistry and clicked really well. It's not a perfect show by any means, but I was, the right age for it. It came at the right time. And I remember when I was working hockey schools, traveling the country, and seasons would air in the summer, every single guy on the staff would be pumped to watch this, and we would be back in the hotel on Sunday nights and watch it together. So good memories too. So Entourage is my third one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely an interesting one because, you could argue you could go in either the comedy or the drama since it was kind of a little bit of both. But yeah, just again, one of those, you know, kind of big shows for HBO. Obviously very, you know, most of the show loosely based on, you know, Mark Wahlberg's experiences as an up-and-coming star. Like I said, you know, it's got a really good, strong cast, some good characters in it. I do remember when the there was some good hype when the movie did come out. But like you said, you know, didn't do as well as I think many probably would have hoped for.
Yeah, it didn't bomb, but it wasn't a huge hit either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think most people probably just looked at it as like a almost like a 90-minute TV episode.
Sure.
that you actually had to pay for. So, but regardless, I mean, when you think about, you know, great series from HBO, I know this is definitely one that a lot of people do talk about and do have some good fond memories for. So, Chad, did you have anything else to say about Entourage?
Yeah, I'm probably in the like it, don't category for Entourage. It is what I know Steve talked about this, Bennett talked about this with, I think it was Arrested Development. This was one of the shows where I remember getting the Blockbuster mailing DVDs, the Netflix type system that they used to have, and where I binged through all the seasons of it, and I liked it. I think some of the ensemble characters like Turtle and Drama just didn't connect with enough for it to really kind of with me on a like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, Chad, you've got one entry left on your Mount Rushmore of sitcoms, so why don't you let us know what it is?
Yeah, this is kind of a nostalgia pick. I haven't watched any episodes of this show in 15 years, probably 15 plus years. I'm kind of scared to go back. I know it started in the late 90s, but it's, to me, it's synonymous with a 2000s show. Just kind of in the moment in time where I was, which is funny when I say the name of the show here in a minute and the decade it takes place in. But when I was at the University of Georgia, this was kind of the ultimate, like, we've come home from the bar, you know, let's throw something on the TV as we're winding down. And inevitably, like, this show would just come on and you could kind of come in at any point, watch it, not have to think that hard about it. But I do think it was maybe in some instances more funny and clever than it's given credit for. So my pick is That 70s Show. I thought the seasons were fairly consistent of it, even as the kids aged up, which doesn't always happen where, you know, a lot of times in certain aging of the series, Goldberg's, I think, is an easy one to think about. Like, as the kids aged up towards those later seasons, it got a little ridiculous with the way they were portraying some of the characters. I thought they stayed pretty true on That 70s Show. Red Foreman, you know, a great kind of stereotypical dad of the 70s. And the ensemble cast, I thought everyone kind of filled their role well. And again, this is sort of my turn your brain off comedy. Would be pleasantly surprised if this made anyone's list, but I wanted to give it a shout out. And it's more for the memories. Like, when I think of watching comedies in the 2000s, that 2004 to 2006 window, almost every night I was ending my night falling asleep to That 70s Show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this also was an honorable mention for me. Like you said, even though it did start in 98, I do think it is more synonymous with being in the 2000s. Again, just kind of a unique show for the time, because it was coming around right at a time where nostalgia was really starting to become more of a bigger thing for people. You know, they're kind of, you know, those that kind of grew up in the 80s and the, or the 70s and the 80s, and then even in the early 90s were, you know, reminiscing about that time frame. You're seeing it a lot more in like television movies. So I think it definitely was a perfect time for that show to come out. You know, again, launched Ashton Kutcher's career, Mila Kunis's career, some other good, you know, great, you know, good casting in it. You know, I think that 80s show didn't hit off as well as it probably could have. I know that we got now that 90s show that just came out about a year ago on Netflix that supposedly has gotten some good reviews. So we'll see if that goes any further. But yeah, I think definitely in particular that, you know, when I think when Fox needed a really good sitcom to kind of carry things throughout, you know, as the decade turned, I think this was definitely a good anchor show for them for that the time that it was on. So Steve, did you have anything else to say about That 70s Show?
Sure. I never watched That 70s Show, never really seen it, but I do have two things I wanted to say. what I saw a stat that if, you know, you guys said it started in 1998, so it covers the 70s. If they did that now, it would be like that 2009 show or something like that, which made me really upset. And then the other thing is I'm a big, huge Howard Stern fan, and I'm not going to try to say his name, but Wilmer, whatever his name is, was on one time, and he basically told Howard and Artie that he slept with every star in Hollywood. And I think he implied that he took Mandy Moore's virginity. And then when the show ended, Mandy Moore vehemently denied that, and poor Wilmer had to walk all that back. I think he kind of got caught up in the moment trying to impress Howard and Artie. But it's a great interview to look back on if you're interested. It's really funny. Artie Lang is particularly hilarious revving Wilmer up. But I wanted to mention those two things. But I just haven't seen it. No heat or anything on it. I just never watched it for whatever reason.
Okay. Well, Steve, you've got one entry left on your Mount Rushmore, so why don't you go ahead and let us know what it is.
All right. So if you actually gave me a mountain and said I had to actually carve out a Mount Rushmore for the world to see every day, I don't know if I'd have the balls to put this one on there. But I did want to throw it out in the spirit of I assume no one else would have it on. So another show to discuss for a second, but it's Undeclared. When Freaks and Geeks, which is the best one season show of all time, that's something I would fight anyone to the death on. When it was canceled, they tried to right that wrong by giving the creators this show Undeclared. It's not as good as Freaks and Geeks. It does have some hilarious moments. It also suffered the same fate as Freaks and Geeks and didn't last very long. But its fastball was really fast. And I wanted to give it a shout out. When I read my honorable mentions, gun to my head, I might bump one of the other two above it, but it deserved to be mentioned. So I said, what the hell? No one else is going to have it. I'll put it at my number four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is, again, one I'm not really that familiar with, maybe just because it was on for one season. Obviously, you know, the creator, Judd Apatow, would go on to have a very great career in terms of films over the next, you know, two decades. So this was kind of, you know, him's kind of still kind of finding himself. And again, kind of a, you know, when you look at the cast here, I mean, you got Jay Baruchel, Seth Rogen, you know, Carla Gallo. So, I mean, again, pretty decent cast for the time. And like you said, just, you know, maybe the fact that it only had one season doesn't really, you know, it didn't really have any, you know, chance to get its, you know, get playing its foot down. Although many do consider it one of the best cult shows of the last, you know, several years. So, again, just one of those ones that I'm sure if you ask people about it, they'll probably be like, oh, yeah, I remember that show. Chad, did you have anything else to say about Undeclared?
Yeah, no, this is one I have never watched. I enjoyed Freaks and Geeks, but I've never gotten around to this one for whatever reason.
Yeah, I will say, too, if you like Judd, you know, if you like his movies, you'll probably like the show. You know, I think this is a closer bridge to his movie career than maybe Freaks and Geeks was. Although I think both are brilliant. This is the second best of the two. So if you have to watch one, definitely watch Freaks and Geeks. But it was very good at its best.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have one entry left on my Mount Rushmore, so I'm going to go ahead and talk about it here again. Kind of similar to the Parks and Rec came out at the end of the decade, so we could straddle the line between this decade and this and the next one. And I did go with Community. I was, you know, set in a community college. Again, another pretty strong, you know, solid cast. You have Joe McHale, Allison Brie, Donald Glover, Ken Jeong, Chevy Chase. Again, a show that's you know, did very well in terms of, like, you know, reception. Ratings wise, it didn't do too well. That's why it only ended up lasting five seasons on NBC, and then it got one more on Yahoo Screen, or Yahoo Video of all things. But again, just to kind of, you know, go on to develop, you know, good cult following. And again, kind of like I said, one of those shows that kind of, you know, suffered from, you know, that transition we were starting to make from, like, mainstream television to the streaming services. And I think it's, again, one of those ones where if you, like, you know, you go back and, you know, watch it, I'm sure most will say that it definitely that it still holds up to this day. And there's, you know, and it looks like we haven't seen it yet, but it looks like there is going to be a film based on the show coming out here for Peacock very shortly. So we'll have to we'll have to keep an eye on that. Again, nobody else had it on their Mount Rushmore, but Steve, did you have anything else to say about Community?
I will say I absolutely love Chevy Chase. I know a lot of people don't get him, maybe, especially now, but I think he's one of the funniest people who ever lived, and he's great on this show. I probably should have included it, but I thought of it more as sort of the next decade, maybe.
Hmm. Yeah, again, it kind of straddles that
line.
It's right there. Yeah. Chad?
Yeah, this would be an honorable mention for me as well. Greatly enjoyed it. Again, I think it just didn't make my list because I emotionally connect to my four shows a little bit more. But yeah, this was a staple while it was on too. I know it didn't have the most biggest ratings, but this was kind of an integral moment where I was starting to listen to podcasts a lot more around the time Community came out. And so Alan Sepinwall, Daniel Feinberg, they were huge fans of Community, and that helped kind of turn me onto the show as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that will conclude our main list, but now let's go ahead and talk about any other album mentions that we have not yet talked about. Steve, do you want to go ahead and start?
Sure, I just have a couple. The first one would have made my list if they never made their finale. I believe it to be the worst television finale I've ever seen, and that is How I Met Your Mother, 2005. Also, it is hurt by the fact that Ted's a dick and nobody likes Ted, but I think there's brilliance in the show, and there's some great seasons and good characters, but the talk about a bad finale. Weeds was my second honorable mention. It was a Showtime show. Probably stayed too long, but had some really funny stuff. Kevin Nealon is brilliant in it. And one that I found funny but never really caught on, I don't think. But I did laugh when I watched it, so I mentioned it here. And that was Rules of Engagement. Not a show I've seen every episode of, but I laughed when I watched it. So I figured I'd throw it on as an honorable mention. 2007 for that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are some good ones. Yeah, How I Met Your Mother nearly made my honorable mentions. It was just, again, one I didn't really have that much of an interest in. And that might actually be a potential future Mount Rushmore episode, worst series finales.
Yeah.
I'm sure those that remember the Seinfeld finale or the Game of Thrones finale would probably challenge you on that statement you made, but I think it's definitely that would definitely be a good discussion. And then we can also talk about best series finales, because I'm sure there are obviously many great ones too. Chad, did you have any other honorable mentions that you haven't talked about?
Yeah, I had a couple real quickly on How I Met Your Mother. Never watched it. And I will say the universal hate for the series finale has kind of scared me away to where it's awful. Just it just may not be worth it.
They even played Pearl Jam on it and I hate it.
That says something. I was glad you said Weeds, Bennett, because that was an honorable mention for me too. I thought it did a good job of kind of straddling that dramedy line.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was successful in that way. Two that happened later in the 2000s. I think one actually started in the 2010s. But Modern Family, obviously a very safe show in some regards. I think it did have the aging problem where Manny, especially as a character, got just way too old as the show progressed. So the later seasons, forget it. But those first couple of seasons, I thought it was a good show, to where, even with a lot of these comedies, again, as I talked about when I was a kid, I was able to watch stuff like Friends and Frasier and The Cosby Show with my parents, and everybody in the family seemed to enjoy it at different ages. A lot of those 2000 comedies, that wasn't the case, where, my parents have never watched Arrested Development or whatnot. And Modern Family was the show that my parents were watching. I was watching as a newlywed at the time. So I did think it created that generational gap. Well, the last show I've gone talk about a very niche hit. I think only me and Ben Morse enjoyed this show. Three seasons. It was on ABC. It's called Happy Endings. An ensemble cast, six characters, had Damon Wayans, was kind of the biggest name, I would say, of the cast. But Alicia Cuthbert also was on the cast of Happy Endings. But just something about that show clicked. I loved all the bits. I loved the dynamic of all six of the characters. And it really, like, fits me. If there's ever, like, oh, what's one show that you may like better than anybody else, I always say Happy Endings, because I, like, love it. It's one of my favorite TV shows of all time, and I understand, like, nobody else has watched it or even heard of it usually. So there you go.
Yeah, I debated Modern Family as well for my honorable mentions, but I just kind of figured it. I just kind of associated more with the 2010s, so that's why I just kind of missed my mine. I did have three other shows in my honorable mentions that nobody's mentioned yet. I did. Steve, I think, did mention it briefly. Scrubs, kind of, you know, an interesting show because at the time, you know, most, you know, shows, TV shows that took place in, like, side of a hospital were usually dramas. So to see them try to do a comedy of it was pretty interesting. So I thought that that deserved a nod. Another kind of really, like, weird show almost that came out in a very interesting time. My Name is Earl. Again, kind of one of those shows that that Fox was kind of using to kind of anchor the mid-2000s in terms of their sitcoms. And again, kind of one of those ones where it's like you either got the humor or you didn't. So I think, again, just kind of it attract. I think, you know, certain people were probably going to, you know, we're either going to really like it or really hate it. And then the last one here, again, a show that, you know, lasted a long time. Despite, you know, some of the controversy surrounding one of the stars, of course, and that's Two and a Half Men. You know, kind of the little, you know, kind of reboot here for Charlie Sheen until he got into trouble, and then they end up going with Ashton Kutcher to replace him. But again, kind of one of those, you know, memorable shows that when you think of that decade, that's when you think about, especially the Charlie Sheen seasons.
Yeah, I remember that show being the one that was like, I can't believe they're saying this on network TV show. Pretty funny. I don't know. Maybe I just didn't think of that in this. Maybe I thought of it as, I don't know why I didn't put that, because I do like that show. One thing I wanted to say, too, is My Name Is Earl was NBC. Your mother would tell you that. You maybe just misspoke.
You know what? I think you're right. I must have.
I don't want you in trouble at home. That's all.
I appreciate that. Okay, yeah, you're right. It was 20th Century Fox who produced it, but yeah, it wasn't an issue. Now that I think about it, I do remember. All right, well, that will go ahead and wrap up this first half here. We talked to a lot of great sitcoms throughout the decade of the 2000s, but now we're going to go ahead and take, in essence, a commercial break. When we come back, we are going to talk about some of our dramas that we've from the decade that we think would be on our Mount Rushmores. This is Making Mount Rushmore here on the PTV Pop Experience, and we will be back on the other side of this break. Rushmore here on the PTV Pop Experience. I am Steve Riddle, along with Steve Bennett and Chad Campbell. We are talking TV shows from the 2000s, the shows basically that are kind of best remembered for that decade. We, of course, in the first half talked great sitcoms, and now we're going to flip the script here and talk about some of the best dramas from this decade. Obviously, there's been a lot of really good dramas throughout the years, throughout this decade, and I will go ahead and kick things off here with probably the obvious one here. I mean, if you're talking 2000s TV dramas, you'd be mad not to mention this show. It is one of the best shows of the decade, one of HBO's best shows of all time, and arguably one of the greatest, you know, TV shows in general. And that is, of course, The Sopranos. Of course, it did start airing in 1999, but like I said, hit the majority of its, dominated the 2000s. Like I said, one of HBO's, prime shows. If you were doing a Mount Rushmore of HBO shows, this would probably be on there as well. James Gandolfini, fantastic. Of course, is Tony Soprano. God rest his soul. Again, some great characters throughout. A real good. Great, mob show, one that's, you didn't really see a lot of TV shows about the mob, especially around that time. So I think this definitely was a great representation of that. Of course, you had just a few years ago, the prequel film, The Many Saints of Newark, to kind of put a little bow on the show.
Trash.
that notwithstanding, When you think about, like I said, the 2000s in terms of dramas, this is easily, I think, on everybody's Mount Rushmore as one of the best TV shows of all time. And in fact, when Rolling Stone did their 100 Greatest TV Shows of All Time list in 2016 and 2022, this ranked number one. So it goes to show how much of an impact this show did have on pop culture, especially around that time. So, Chad, it did make your Mount Rushmore as well.
Yeah. This is a slam dunk pick. I mean, I think this is a show where you actually could have been justified putting it on the comedy list too. It's a hilarious show in its own right. If I had to choose today, I would say this is what I think is the best TV show of all time. I'm in the course of my fourth rewatch. I've really been kind of slow rolling rewatch the last year, watching an episode every 4 or 5 days, just whenever I get the time, and still holds up, still great. Season 3, I think, is just absolutely a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. But I mean, all the seasons are tremendous, even like the lows to me of The Sopranos are still pretty high. Like, it's a pretty high floor all around, and just the characters and kind of how they weave the characters in and out, and then also the characters that stayed and were so memorable, like even someone like Richie. I mean, I don't know how many episodes he had, probably 10 or 12 overall. It's not a ton, but such a memorable character for really such that little screen time that he ended up having in the series run. I don't know. I don't think I need to sell anybody on The Sopranos. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And it was, again, a clean sweep. So, Steve, I know you've been waiting. You had it on your list as well. So go ahead and talk your love for The Sopranos.
This is the greatest show of all time, hands down. If I meet someone and they say they don't like it, I say it was nice to meet you, and I walk the other way. I have to correct you, though. It's not about the mob. It's about Familia. Today, it's April 15th, which is the National Made in Italy Day, which maybe you guys aren't familiar with. But it's a day celebrated every year, dedicated to promoting Italian creativity and excellence. It celebrates Italian engineering and creation and art. And this is one of the masterpieces. David Chase, brilliant. He employed so many Italian Americans and Italians and made them stars and changed their lives. If you grew up in the family like I did, it's very relatable. Now, I didn't really have any family in the mob, quote unquote, but it's again, it's not about that. The way they talk, the way that they ate, the things that they ate, the way that they moved, where they lived, all of these things are so relatable for a passionate Italian American like me. It's brilliant. James Gandolfini was brilliant in it. Edie Falco was brilliant. People they discovered whose first role was in The Sopranos were brilliant. If we were to do 100 episodes of Mount Rushmore and you said, what is one thing that one number one true Mount Rushmore thing, this would be my number one pick. The Sopranos to 2000 television dramas or to all-time TV shows or any kind of TV-related Mount Rushmore you want to make. It is a phrase that's completely overblown. Another one I don't like much. This is a true GOAT. This is like Tom Brady or Michael Jordan or whatever, Steamboat versus Savage. Whatever you want to say, this is number one, number one, number one. God bless The Sopranos. Chad said he's on his 4-3 watch. I've never stopped watching The Sopranos. I always watch. Sometimes I'll turn an episode on. Sometimes I'm doing a real rewatch from 1 to 6.5 or 7, however you want to say it. Or sometimes I just want to watch, like Chad said, season 3. I do have a funny story about it, though. I watched one episode of this show with my Nono and my Nana. And it was the show where Melfi got raped. And it was maybe the most awkward 6 minutes of my entire life. I wanted to crawl into a piece of rigatoni and hide forever. It was very, very bad timing, as they say. And the last thing I'll say is the last time I see my Nono, he was in the garage and he was grilling. Everyone was coming over for dinner. They were getting ready to go to Florida. And his garage, it had a door on the back and a door in the front. So he, in the winter in Buffalo, it's really cold. He would put the grill in the garage, but he could open up the far garage door and you wouldn't die or whatever from that. And when I got there that day, he was in there. So I walked up to him. I said, hello, Nono. You know, I gave him a hug and we were talking. And it had just been announced that when season 6 was going to be. And I told him and he said, oh, no, I hope I'm still alive by then. And I said, oh, no, of course you're going to be alive. And he wasn't. So I always held that against David Chase a little bit, that he didn't finish sooner. So my dear Nono could have seen, but just the best show. So just wanted to say all that.
No, definitely. And no, I do like that little Italian lesson there that you gave us at the beginning. Maybe on a soon episode of Extreme Three-Way Dance over on the North-South Connection, maybe GT will bring that up to Jenny and Matt. So have to.
Yeah, he should. If he's a good Italian, he will. Yeah,
yeah. We'll keep an eye out for that. All right. Well, Chad, let's go now to you. Give us the next entry on your Mount Rushmore of 2000s dramas.
All right. So I think there's a lot of heavy hitters. So I'll give one that I don't know will make anybody else's list. It's actually this was my COVID show. This is one of the show I never watched. Watched it all during COVID, greatly enjoyed it. And that's Deadwood, another HBO drama. Had 3 seasons. another one that we talked about that has a movie later on that's never as good as the TV show. So
it's not add bad, that though. One to the it's list. It's not trash. It's not bad though.
Yeah. Just to me, couldn't.
It gave it an ending that. At least. Yeah, right. At least it gave it an ending. Yeah.
Right. I do think it's unfortunate that this one couldn't have gotten like 4 seasons, 5 seasons. Mm-hmm. But I am a very big fan of Westerns in general. Lonesome Dove's my favorite book of all time. And I think like Al Swearengen's just an amazing character. By the time I watched this show, I was familiar with Timothy Oliphant from Justified, so it was great to kind of go back and watch him in his kind of first starring role. And overall, I think this was a show that it's certainly slow. It requires this is not a show to kind of, like I talked about with that 70s show, that you could just kind of put on, shut your brain off. I think this is a show you have to kind of watch, pick up the nuances, really kind of dig your claws in to get the atmospheric beats of the show. And I can certainly recognize it's not going to be a show for everyone, but again, for me, it really hit, and it's one of my favorite shows. So I was glad I watched it during a rough period of time when I watched the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one that I remember hearing about. I don't think I've seen any of the episodes. It is one that I really like period, like TV shows or films and like historical, shows or films like that. So it's definitely one I think I would probably enjoy if I went back to watch it. Again, you know, like you said, good cast there. Timothy Olyphant, Ian McShane, Brett Dourif. So again, I think it's you know, it's kind of like you said, it only got three seasons, but it's definitely one I think at least for me, I would definitely want to go back and to kind of go back and watch, because it does from what I'm seeing it does look like it was a really good show, especially around considering it came out around the same time, was still around when The Sopranos was still out, so having to get the audiences there. Steve, you did have it though as an honorable mention.
Yeah, and let me explain that. So this would be on my Mount Rushmore, but I thought that this was most likely to be on another list, so I put the one I put at four so I could talk about that show more in depth as well. But I love Deadwood. It's one of the best shows of all time. Again, I think I probably have six or seven between the list and honorable mention that I'd put as a top 20 show, at least, if not a little higher than that. But this show is brilliant. Al Swearengen is one of the great characters of all time. It has an all time heartbreaking moment, which I won't give up, that just crushes you in a way that every TV drama should have a moment like this. Even though it's 20 years old, I still won't spoil it in case, like, Steve, you haven't seen it yet. You deserve to feel the devastation of it as well. But it's great, great. The language, the way it's written, oh, perfect. So good. So good. I love this show. So great pick, Chad. Absolutely deserves to be on Mount Rushmore for 2000 drama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, Steve, we'll continue on with you. Give us the next entry on your Mount Rushmore of 2000s dramas.
All right. The next one I'll throw out is, if it wasn't for Sopranos, would probably be the greatest show of all time, and that's The Wire. The Wire is a piece of art. I worked for years in the Buffalo Public Schools. I went to a Buffalo Public School. I was a student, worked at the elementary school that I went to, and to watch season 4 of The Wire, which might be the best single season in television history, certainly up there. It's unbelievable. I have a slight gripe or two with it. One is that David Simon doesn't like sports. So it's really weird that the Ravens are like oddly missing, just like Tremé, which is another great show he did, absolutely should have ended with the New Orleans Saints Super Bowl parade. I actually got in a long argument with him about that on Twitter once, but he doesn't get sports. So that's sort of a negative. But the other thing is season 5 is really bad. You have 4 seasons in the show that are A+ to A-, and then you have a C+ season. So the floor, I think, is significantly lower than the other shows on my list. But this show is a piece of art. It's brilliant. And it's worth, if someone told me this is the greatest show of all time, I would say I understand why you say that. It's that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had this as an honorable mention. Again, a show that I may have seen maybe once or twice in terms of like a random episode here or there. But again, another one I've always kind of had an interest to go back and watch. Being that I used to live in Frederick for a long time, I was close to Baltimore, so I would definitely get a lot of the references and a lot of the visuals, that sort of thing. So it seems like it would be an interesting show to go back and rewatch here. But Chad, you did have it on your Mount Rushmore as well.
Yeah, I echo Bennett's thoughts, especially the season. That's why I do prefer Sopranos, and then I prefer another show that's on my list over The Wire, just because of that one season is
a disaster compared
to the others. But an amazing show, and then again, I mean, we keep reiterating it, but just the characters that are on these shows, like when you have Omar and Stringer Bell, I mean, these characters, they live with you. Like, you keep thinking of them, and you can fondly remember the scenes from the show. The show did a great job. As somebody that's never been to Baltimore except going through the airport on a connecting flight, very popular connecting flight to Providence, by the way, from Atlanta's through Baltimore, so I've had to do that a couple times, is it, this show kind of gave me a understanding, you know, where I felt like, okay, like I've never been in the surrounding geographical area, but the show itself lets you know kind of what the city is about at this point in time. So it does a great job in that regard.
One other thing before we move on to, there's two things I want to mention. One is there is a scene between Stringer Bell and Avon Barksdale where they're standing on a balcony talking. It's about a 2-minute scene, and it is so brilliant. I don't want to give anything away because, again, this is made in 2002. Probably spoilers should be allowed at this point, but it's so good I wouldn't want to ruin it. But these two guys are on this balcony, and they have like about a 2.5-minute dialogue, and again, it's one of the best scenes, I think, in television history. The other thing I want to mention, there's this part in season one. I can't say this because I don't really spoil anything, but there's a character named Wallace. It's actually Michael B. Jordan, who is arguably probably the biggest star to come out of the show. And he had left he was about to flip, and he had left Baltimore to be with his grandma. And then he came back, and one of the guys is kind of talking to him and saying, you know, the game might not be for you anymore. You know, maybe you should go back to your grandma, whatever. And he kind of holds his hands out, and he points behind him to the projects, and he's like, this right here, this is me. You know, this is what I'm about. And I'm not from the projects. I was, you know, born in the inner city. I lived in the inner city. But to me, it's such a relatable moment in the show. You know, someone who bleeds and loves where he's from. I love Buffalo so much. When I'm gone for 3 or 4 days and I come back and I look out the window of the airplane, I feel alive again. And it's never been, that feeling has never been duplicated as well as it was in The Wire. And there's several moments like that. I'm sure if you brought every Wire fan on, they'd have a moment where they'd say, wow, this moment is so profound. It's a great, great, great piece of art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, I'll go ahead and give my next entry on my Mount Rushmore, and we've talked a lot of great HBO shows, but I will go back to network TV, and I remember when this show was being teased, there was a lot of hype for it, and I just remember it being, you know, just so, you know, very highly anticipated, and I did end up going with The OC. Came out in 2003 for Fox. Pretty much, I think, tried to be the to the 2000s what 90210 was to the 90s for Fox. This group of young people living in Southern California, them going through their, like, you know, their daily lives. First season, you know, widely considered one of the, you know, best dramas of that season. Ratings did kind of decline over time, and eventually it did end up it only lasted for 4 seasons. But it did leave, like I said, a very profound impact on TV, especially when it came out at a time when Fox was really looking for some new dramas, and like I said, I think trying to kind of recapture the glory that they had with 90210. Excuse me, in the 90s. So again, kind of a lower rent version, but like I said, I do remember The OC being very big when it first came out. So I thought it definitely deserved a mention. It did not make anybody else's list, but Chad, did you have anything else to say about The OC?
Never seen it. It was just on the latest episode that dropped a 90210 No So. That was my first ever episode I've watched of Beverly Hills 90210. So, you can catch my thoughts on that, but yeah, never watched, obviously 90210 or The OC or, any of those dramas. Just kind of, I think I was at the wrong age, for those to kind of resonate with me.
Steve?
This show's for ladies, no? I mean, I feel like this is something my girlfriends watched at the time. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I'm sure it was probably aimed more towards a female demographic, but I'm sure they probably wanted, you know, men to watch it too.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I've never seen any of these, like, what was the one that was really popular when I was in high school? With the kid from Mighty Ducks, that one, or 90210, or any of these kind of, like, I don't know. There's not for me, I guess. Dawson's Creek was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, that was big too. So, Okay. Well, Steve, we'll go ahead back to you. Give us the next entry on your Mount Rushmore of 2000s dramas.
Okay, this is the last and I think the trifecta of all-time great, although if maybe it's actually a quad with Deadwood as well, and the one I put it for, which is more of a personal thing, but it's Mad Men. Again, we're going to go back to this, right? Characters. Don Draper, one of the great characters of all time. January Jones, one of the hottest television wives of all time. The most inevitable lung cancer death for a television character ever, though. If you've seen the show, that makes sense. Beautiful, beautiful women, a period piece, beautifully done. You never, sometimes with period pieces, they screw it up and you get out of the, you feel out of the period or what. It never got that way. Brilliant till the last episode. Incredible connection to reality. I remember hearing that the one season was going to be about 1963 and being so incredibly excited because I'm a big Kennedy assassination guy. I'm really looking forward to that. And they delivered just an excellent, excellent show. Every bit as good as The Wire and Sopranos, but maybe a tad notch below those if we're being really, really, really picky. I think it doesn't have the lows of The Wire, but not necessarily the highs of Soprano and The Wire, but it's right there with them. It's great. I think it was the first time I ever watched a show on the network. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, this, and it's a slow burn. You gotta stick with it at first. I think The Wire's like that too. But the payoff is great. It's a great, great show. Don Draper, all time, a Mount Rushmore character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I had this on my Mount Rushmore as well. Again, one of those shows where I've maybe seen like a couple of episodes, but it's always one that's definitely kind of I've wanted to go back and watch because, again, I love period pieces. And I mean, the 60s were such a, you know, such a crazy time. I mean, when I was in a community college, one of the courses I took was basically all about the 1960s. So, you know, hit all the like the big events of that decade, the culture, the fashion, the music, et cetera, that sort of thing. So I feel like this is definitely a show I could really get into if I want, you know, watching it from start to finish. Like you said, again, now we're hitting, you know, one of AMC's probably biggest shows when it came out. And again, you know, came out in 07. So again, you can argue, does it, you know, is it more synonymous with this decade or the next decade? But I think, I don't think anybody would disagree if we had for anyone that does put it on a Mount Rushmore for this decade. And we have a second clean sweep as Chad, this was your final entry on your Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, this is my number two show of all time. Amazing show, obviously. I think the discovery of this show was really fun for me because it was a show I was in real early. Where I was working at the time, and also, like I said, listening to those podcasts, I know, like, Alan Sepinwall gave this a real glowing review when it first came out, and I was like, AMC, is he kidding me? And then I watched the show, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, like, this is awesome. Like, it really resonated, and I do love the progression from the first season at the start of 1960 to the last season as we get to 1970. You really see that progression of the decade. And I thought they did a very clever job in weaving in the historical moments of the decade around the plot points of the show. So you get like Nixon versus Kennedy, you get the Kennedy assassination, you have like Don Draper turning off the Beatles, which is hilarious.
Right,
moment.
Yep.
So they did a great job in, you know, not hitting you over the head with these historical moments, but kind of seamlessly weaving them into the show itself. And to me, this is a show that I think it's probably more consistent than even The Sopranos. But yeah, I don't know if the high highs quite reach like the couple of what I would say is the best Soprano episodes of all time. But to me, it's right there. I think it's natural with AMC to do like a Mad Men versus a Breaking Bad comparison. And to me, it seems like with popular consensus, a lot of people are in the Breaking Bad bucket. I'm guessing that'll come up if not in somebody else's Mount Rushmore as an honorable mention. But I was always a Mad Men person. Like I just preferred Mad Men.
I'm with you, Chad.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good, interesting comparison between those two shows, and to see like who prefers one or the other. All right, well, I'll go ahead and give my last entry on my Mount Rushmore. This might be a little bit controversial because I know this show has it does have its fans, but it does have its detractors. And another show that when we talk about like bad series finales, this is I think in the discussion as well. And that's the show Lost. Came out in 2004, lasted six seasons. I believe this was one of our first entries from ABC. Again, just an interesting, kind of a unique premise. A group of survivors, from a plane crash on this stranded island, trying to survive, and we go through like their personal lives, and like each one has their own personal problems. Again, a show that I think many people probably thought went on a little bit too long, even at only six seasons. And then again, I know the finale definitely divided a lot of people, as did the series itself. But I do remember it being a huge show at the time, especially when it first came out. It did do very well in terms of ratings, and it was pretty well reviewed, at least those early seasons. I think the reviews kind of went down as the later seasons came on. But I think, like I said, when you think about, dramas from this decade, that's definitely one that's that I think a lot of people do remember, again, whether it be fondly or not so fondly. It didn't make anybody else's Mount Rushmore, but Chad, did you have anything else to say about Lost?
I've never seen it. I'll ask you, Steve. I kind of, in some ways, lost in with How I Met Your Mother, and I know that the ending is pretty controversial.
Yeah.
I don't think it's, like, as universally hated as How I Met Your Mother, but as someone that does know kind of the general gist of what the ending, like, what happened, like, the overarching mystery, but nothing up to that point, because I've never seen an episode, would you say it's worth still kind of the taking the journey or not at this point?
Well, this is what I would say about Lost, is that I think it suffered for something a lot of shows do, and that's that I think the creators had an idea for it that maybe lasted like three seasons, and then it became so popular that there was a need for it. The money was too big. It went six seasons, right? And I think when they got past that original idea, they have this big writing staff now, and they're just fighting and crawling and trying to get to the finish line and trying to think of new ideas. I think Game of Thrones suffered for this when they got past the books. I think there's other examples we could probably think of where the show should have been this long, because that was what they created. That was the idea they had. That's what they had mapped out. I think this is a really good example of a show that suffered from that. I probably don't think it's worth the journey. I would probably say that the reason, if we're comparing the two, if you kind of know the ending, what journey would you go on? I'd probably go on the How I Met Your Mother one, just because it's a little lighter. It's a little easier. This show requires so much, like, trying to, why are they talking about these numbers? What's this? What's that? And then the payoff, just, I don't think it clicks. It doesn't hit. It's like, all that work for that? I don't know. I think I answered your question.
Plus too, like I said, those later seasons, you're jumping between different timelines, and I think it's just it just became too much to try to track, and I think that's ultimately why it suffered. So that's a good discussion, like, if how does the divisiveness of the series finale taint the show itself. So a discussion for another day. But Steve, you have one entry left on your Mount Rushmore, so why don't you let us know what it is?
Yeah, I think this is similar to Chad's last one on sitcoms. But in this case, it's probably myself and your mother who enjoy it. It's a show called Ed, which was a show about a lawyer who walks in on his wife having sex with the mailman, gets divorced, moves back to a small town, and buys a bowling alley. that he practices law out of. And that's the kickoff for the show. It's an incredible show. It's so underrated. It never found its audience. NBC, I'll give them credit. They stuck with it. It centers around a love story between the lawyer's crush, which is played by Julie Bowen, who's absolutely beautiful in the show. She plays a character named Carol Vesey. There's this relationship between Ed and his best friend, and they make all these like $10 bets. And I remember when this was out, me and my friends would always make $10 bets, a few friends that also watched it. But it is such a good show that just never found an audience. And I put it on there because it's worth it. Now, here's another reason it never found an audience. While every other show was putting out DVD sets for this, they never could because it was so music heavy. They didn't own the rights. And also, it was another show that was split between a production company owned that created it and the network that aired it. And nobody wanted to take responsibility for it and put out the DVDs or secure the music. And it never got a release like that. When every show, this is one I know that if it would have had DVD sets, it could have been one of those shows that had a second life like Family Guy and Arrested Development. But I can't recommend it enough. You can find the episodes are on YouTube. I think they're out there. You can find them on torrents or whatever. It's worth your time. It's a great show. It really is. It's got heart. It's got real heart in it. Like, I know I'm gushing a little bit here, but it's a really special show. And the reason I just put it over Deadwoods because I knew no one else would have it, and it just deserved to be mentioned. So God bless Ed. What a great show. And Julie Bowen's so hot in it. Trust me. Check it out.
I do remember. I vaguely remember the show. Again, one of those ones where it kind of like, you know, kind of toes the line of being a comedy and a drama. So, it, you know, depends on how you feel about it, where, you know, which category you can go in. And yeah, like you said, it, you know, they tried to stick with it. It did last four seasons, never got any traction, especially at a time when, you know, for NBC, Friends was starting to wind down, so they really could have used something to kind of fill that void. And it seemed like this was the show they wanted to do it, but just never was able to. So definitely something to go back and check out. Chad, do you have anything else to say about Ed?
No, I never watched it, but the premise sounds cool. So I didn't even really know what the show was about. So thank you, Bennett, for grabbing that. Sounds good.
And I will say, as a show that only got four seasons, it's still 83 one-hour episodes. You know, it was right. The network 20-episode seasons, basically. It wasn't like it was a streaming show that had seven-episode seasons. They were able to tell this. I think it's the opposite of Lost, where they were able to tell the story in a tight – I mean, even 83 episodes, that's a lot, really. And I think that NBC was good enough to stay with it for them – to tell the Ed and Carol story all the way through and to pay it off. So even though it's unlike like a show like Deadwood that was clearly cut off before you could get a true ending, which is why I do appreciate that movie because it gave such a great show an ending. Ed is one that was able to finish and still has 83 episodes, even though only four seasons.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that will conclude our main list, so we'll now go ahead and talk about any other honorable mentions that we haven't discussed yet. I'll go ahead and start here because I have three that we haven't – actually, four that we haven't talked about yet. The first one, kind of going back to HBO, 6 Feet Under, kind of another interesting premise there, you know, focusing on a family that runs a funeral home in Los Angeles, kind of an interesting little premise there. Again, another show that did extremely well for HBO, even though it was only on for it was only there for a couple of seasons. Another kind of big show for the time before Twilight made vampires kind of more mainstream. You had True Blood, again, kind of one of those ones where it's like, you know. You know, a fantasy horror drama, kind of, you know, about vampires. Again, kind of a, you know, big show there for HBO. Did lasted seven seasons. So kind of like I said, around the time that Twilight was coming out. So you know, vampires were definitely were all the thing back in 2008 when the show started here. another show, kind of a very unique show for you know, considering you know the subject matter behind it, Dexter. One of Showtime's biggest shows. Again, kind of, you know, had a good little run there of 8 seasons there on Showtime. Again, kind of a unique premise there about a forensic technician who has basically a double life as a serial killer. So I thought that deserves some love. And then I did also we touched on it briefly. I did include Breaking Bad. In my honorable mentions, again, one of those ones where, you know, is it more synonymous with this decade or the next decade? Because it did come out in 2008. But again, when it did come out, it did extremely well, some big numbers. And of course, it did spawn its own franchise, including, Better Call Saul, which if we do a 2010s episode, that show might make that list. So those were some of my honorable mentions. Chad, did you have any other honorable mentions that we haven't talked about?
Chad,
quickly, yep. Before we move on to you, I have to ask Steve an important question here. This could go for either list, because I heard a lot of like, now my next pick is this, and I've only seen like 2 episodes. But me and Chad are like pouring our hearts out here. Is there any show that either was mentioned that you are passionate about? Like, do you have a, like, what if it was the Mount Rushmore of shows that Steve likes from the 2000s? Like, what would be on that? Like, I'm really curious. Like, what were your shows? Because I just hear a lot of, like, I saw 2 or 3 of this one. I saw 1 of that one. Like, you're being diplomatic here. But I want to know, like, what are your passions?
Well, I'll be honest. I don't really have a lot of the TV shows that I really watch. I mean, I did watch a lot of for me, it was a lot like, you know, like cartoons like Simpsons, South Park, Family Guy, and mainly a lot of wrestling with my primary shows.
Saturday Night's Main Event would be on your Mount Rushmore then, prime time, those kind of things.
Don't get me wrong. Like I said, I know the popularity of the shows, and again, there's a bunch of shows that we've talked about that I want to go back and check out. You know, obviously there's only so many hours of the day that you can do so, I've heard a lot of, you know, obviously been very intrigued by a lot of these shows, so I do definitely want to check a lot of them out. So,
all right, well, I just wanted to get a little piece of your heart into the podcast as well. You work hard on this, Steve. I want to give you a chance to put your heart out there a little bit. You know what I mean? Let me ask you another question. Which of these shows do you think you're most likely to watch now, based on the passion and love that Chad and I have displayed for them?
Oh, definitely The Sopranos.
Oh, that a boy. Okay. I want a running diary on that from you. I want that done quickly, please.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Sorry, Chad.
Yeah, go ahead and give if you have any honorable mentions.
All right, let me try to rattle these off. Dexter, by the way, first 4 seasons, elite. Season 5, you know, okay, good enough. After that, it's a very unfortunate ending. Heroes, quick shout out. First season, I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of my nerd show. After that, forget it. So quick shout out for them. But a couple of shows I did consider, 24. Thought it was a great show. You know, to me, this is a show that's synonymous with that 2000 to 2009 time frame, with kind of national security, the format change, where, you know, it was a clever gimmick. You know, if you start thinking about it a little bit too much, it's like, oh my God, like, why does this guy have so much that happens in a 24-hour period? And, you know, he's had 7 of these days over 7 seasons where he never sleeps, and all this happens within this time frame. So, but when it hit, like, season 5 of 24, just a great show. And when it came out, it felt like such a neat concept. West Wing also, I think, was a network drama in the 2000s. That still had some kind of oomph to it. I've rewatched the first few seasons of The West Wing with the Martin Sheen seasons, and it's still a great drama as well. And then the one that just missed out on my list and season two and the writer's strike is the reason why it doomed it, and that is Friday Night Lights. I love four out of the five seasons of this show. Season two, I think, is even a worse drop-off than season five of The Wire, where it's just like, it doesn't make it for me, and therefore it kind of suffers a little bit there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Heroes in 24, because I remember those shows, both those shows being extremely, you know, huge when they came out. Particularly, I remember there was a lot of hype for Heroes when it came out, and again, one of those shows that, you know, I've seen a few episodes of, and it's, again, one I've always kind of been intrigued to go back and watch full time. So so definitely interesting. So good picks there.
I definitely think that's a show where they had a neat concept. They had some great ideas. And then after season one, it was like, okay, we're scrambling and we don't know, you know, where this plane is landing, which is unfortunate.
Kind of similar to Lost in a way, so.
Yeah, it seems like Lost had it together for, you know, a few seasons. I would say for Heroes, it is like season one's tremendous, and then after that, it's almost garbage.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steve, do you have any other honorable mentions we haven't talked about?
I do, but I was just thinking, Steve, you know in school, you get in trouble, like the Bart Simpson gag, you had to write on the chalkboard or whatever? I think if you ever got in trouble in school, your teacher should have had you write a list of shows you've seen a few episodes of. Like you would have been there longer than the Breakfast Club kids doing that. But a few honorable mentions here. Talked about Deadwood. That's my, 4B. The Good Wife, shout out to Juliana Margulies. This is 2009. It debuted, so it's more the next decade. But she's really hot and really good in a show that during the World Series or the NFL playoffs or something, they did ads for every time the play stopped, but it was better. It was actually good. Veronica Mars, Kristen Bell, really hot in that. Okay. 6 Feet Under, another good HBO show. I wrote down Freaks and Geeks because it was 99 to 2000, the one. Again, just to mention, it's the best one season show ever. Band of Brothers was, a contained series. It's one season, but it was meant to be that. And it's really good on HBO, 2001. The Shield. Oh shit, your AirPods fell out. Hold on. The Shield 2002, really good. Watch that. Breaking Bad, I mentioned as an honorable mention. To me, it's an action show. I know there's drama in there, but it's more like an action movie than a show to me. I do like it, but I don't like it as much as people who love it do, partially because I like Saul better. And the last one, Rescue Me. Artie Lang has a great recurring role in this and really good stuff. And then the last, very, very last show I wanted to mention, I didn't put it on because it's one season again and it's just 2010. So that's obviously not the 2000s, but I wanted to shout out a show called Terriers, which was an FX show. And it's on Hulu. You can watch it if you want. It's the most generic concept of all time. It's like a fired cop who becomes a PI and follows him, but it's so good. It's like the best show to have the worst jump off concept, maybe like an anti-Ed, the opposite of Ed, but worth mentioning. So many, many shows. This is a great topic for a Mount Rushmore because it pays off. And I want to mention a book called Difficult Men by a guy named Brett Martin, which was written about the anti-hero, which emerged through this decade of shows. The Don Drapers, the Tony Sopranos, the Breaking Bad guy. What's his name? Help me out. Can't think of it.
Walter White.
Yep, and all those guys. It's a great book if you are looking for one about this era of television. And again, shout out to Steppenwall as well, who Chad has mentioned. Not the nicest human being in the world. I've dealt with him, but a brilliant television writer who has running reviews of many of the shows we mentioned. Sopranos and Wire for sure. Sopranos is a book you can, if you're watching, like when you're watching it, Steve, if you download his book, you can go episode by episode and read his brilliant reviews. It's worth it. So I wanted to mention that as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that will go ahead and wrap things up here. We talked a lot of great TV shows, both sitcoms and dramas from the 2000s, which again, when we look at all the shows we talk about, it was quite a loaded decade. I think it's a decade that doesn't get talked about enough for having a lot of great TV shows. But I think we definitely did it justice with all the shows we talked about. So with that, let's go ahead and talk about where everybody where all of us can be found on social media and any other pods or projects we have going on. So, Steve, I'll start with you.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at @sports_casters there. Mostly, though, it is about my Twitter feed is full of Italian soccer players and the Nazionale. But also I do tweet about my podcast, which is the Sportscasters, founded in 2011. If you Google my name and Sports Illustrated, the great John Wertheim wrote an article that makes me sound way better than I am. But it was brilliantly done by a brilliant writer, and I'm forever grateful for it. So if you want to know more about me, for some reason you don't know me, maybe Google that. I also do a side project called the 24-Inch Podcast with Hollywood Dave Rollins, who is the ultimate Hulkamaniac, knows more about 80s wrestling than anyone I know. And my daughter Paula is on that as well, and it's just for fun. And we try to do it every couple weeks. And our next episode or last episode, depending on when this airs, was about WrestleMania 7 and Hulk's match versus Sergeant Slaughter. And also, again, the No-So videos I do here and there. And the Cronoso stuff. Shout out to Ryan for all his hard work on that. That's it. That's enough.
All right, Chad.
At Big Boys Play WCW on the Twitter or X, North South Connection on the YouTube and Podcatcher apps, and then we'll give a little teaser, Steve, for something upcoming that I'm excited about. Be checking out Patreon as it pertains to Wrestling Warzone in the next couple of weeks. We're hoping to have an announcement that's imminent there. Looking for a free Patreon, but just to try to build a community around Wrestling Warzone, and then also some added projects that we'll have going on there. So pretty excited about that. Should be putting a lot of my own personal resources into that in the upcoming weeks and months.
Yeah, sounds good. So can't wait to see how that turns out. As for me, you can usually find me on this feed here with other shows I have, not just this one. Pop Goes the Classics, me, Andy, Miranda. We're going through all the Disney animated films. Most recent episode we did Brother Bear, so our next episode is going to be Home on the Range, which not particularly looking forward to that one, but it should be an interesting rewatch. And of course, Video Jukebox Song of the Day. That's been me, Andy, and Keith mainly. We just live watch a music video. That's been a lot of fun to do that.
Oh, can I make another request like I did last time?
Sure.
All right. Well, Friday, the Mighty Pearl Jam are releasing a new album. It's the most significant album in music that's coming out Friday. Don't listen to all the 12-year-old girls. They'll tell you a different album, but clearly Pearl Jam's Dark Matter comes out. So how about a Pearl Jam video? There's not a lot of them, but maybe to do the Evolution video. It's a cool animated thing. I know you like animated stuff. So how about that for my request this time?
Oh, okay. I will definitely keep that in mind, and when I do my next set of recordings, I'll definitely look into that.
I appreciate that, Steve.
Of course. I also, of course, have over on the PTB Wrestling feed, Extreme Resurrection. That's me and James Grunberg. We're going through ECW, what? WWE's version, Extreme Resurrection.
Oh, I thought you said something else. Go ahead.
No, yes. So yeah, no, Extreme Resurrection. That's
got it.
Okay. Where we talk about WWE's version of ECW from 06 to 2010. We're currently in the fall of 2007, where CM Punk is now the ECW champion. We are kind of seeing how he builds his reign up as he is dealing with some new and up and coming challengers. So be sure to look out for that. And I do also appear periodically on the North South Connection with either Cronoso or with any other side things going on. I do want to give a quick shout out to JT. He's currently now doing a little brief trivia snippet there that's going to be on YouTube and on TikTok, where he brings a guest on and basically just does a quick lightning round of trivia. Chad, I believe you were actually on the first episode, if I'm correct.
Yeah, very, very nerve-wracking 45 seconds.
You beat the other guy, I've seen, though, right? 3-2?
I got two, man.
Keith, I thought you got
Keith. He gives Keith two WCW few questions in the episode after me. I'm like, come on, throw me a bone here. But no,
I would go on, but the first question would be like, who won the main event in WrestleMania 28? And I'd be dead. You know
what I mean? I know your brain really locks up.
Yeah, after WrestleMania 15, I'm pretty much out. You know what I mean?
I mean, I've watched SummerSlam 2002, you know, 10, 15 times, and you know, couldn't for the life of me. All I could think of was Taz for some reason. So it's fun.
Yeah, but be sure to check that out and check out everything else there at the No South YouTube channel. If you haven't subscribed to them, they do a lot of great stuff over there in long form and short form. So give those guys some love. And also, of course, I'm usually found over on the PTB Facebook group. Lots of interesting stuff going on there. And I think it's fitting that we officially announce our next tournaments that will be taking place this summer.
Since we
spent this episode talking about TV, that tournament is going to be all about television, because this summer we are going to be determining PTBN's greatest cartoon of all time.
Oh, no.
So we have 707 entries, spanning over 8 decades, from the 1940s to today. A lot of great shows throughout that time frame. Like I said, pretty much all areas of animation covered: traditional, CGI, 3D. There's a couple that's like animation and a little bit of live action. It is mainly going to be a lot of U.S. cartoons, but we do have other countries represented pretty well. So I think it is going to spawn a lot of good discussion, a lot of good debate. The tournament will officially begin on Friday, May 24th. At 10 a.m. Eastern time. So Memorial Day weekend is when the tournament is going to begin. So I'm very excited about it. I think, like I said, we're going to have a lot of good discussion, a lot of good good debates. We got some great entries. Like I said, great entries involved. Some pretty interesting ones, and ones you might kind of raise your eyebrows at, that you realize that wasn't actually a thing. But I'm definitely looking forward to it. So again, is it
just like kids cartoons, or is it
adult cartoons as well. So it's anything that was an animated show basically is eligible.
The only cartoons I really ever watched are He-Man and Hulk Hogan's Rock and Roll Wrestling. So I'll be voting for them heavily.
Definitely looking forward to that. So, but yes, yeah. Friday,
He-Man's
May 24th,
a one seed, right?
10 a.m.
He-Man's a one seed.
I'll have to go back and check. I know it did rank high, so we'll have to
probably a one seed. Should be a one seed. Go ahead. Yes. Sorry.
That's okay. So yes, Friday, May 24th at 10 a.m. Eastern time, on the PTB Facebook group is when the tournament will begin. We'll have a playing round that will be 6 matchups a day, and then when we get to the main brackets, we'll then drop it down to 4 matchups a day. So again, be ready for that, and be ready to do a lot of voting. So it's going to be a long one, but like I said, it's going to be a lot of fun. So with that, we will go ahead and
Hold on, Steve. Steve, I wanted to give a shout out to the NBC show Lopez and Lopez, a show that Steve has seen a few episodes of. So just wanted to mention that one, a current show, before we sign off. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, with that, we will go ahead and say our goodbyes here. So for Steve Bennett and Chad Campbell, I am Steve Riddle. This has been Making Matt Rushmore here on the PTB Pop Experience, and we will see you next time.